Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he should be born blind? So clearly that was the presumption. Someone had mucked up. Someone had done something wrong, and that this was punishment. How often do you hear that kind of sense of sin, that we're going through this bad experience because of the things that we have done in the past, and that we're being punished for this? But note what Jesus says there. No, I tell you, neither this man nor his parents sinned. So he's automatically removing that sense that sin has a consequence that is external. Because that wasn't the teaching of the Jewish people. They had a very profound sense of sin. Now, when you think about sin, what kinds of words come to mind? What kind of synonyms do we have for the experience of sin? You can kind of think of, we mucked things up, we did bad, we got things wrong, there's a sense of guilt, something that is no longer clean or pure. There's that sense that something has begun to really breach the whole experience of that friendship, of that relationship. When you go through Scripture, there are three main words in both the Old Testament and in the New that try and kind of capture the different qualities of what sin is, what that experience was that the blind man is being accused of in the Gospel today. The first is the most common and the most general. In Hebrew, it's the word kata. And it simply refers to something that has missed the mark. There's that sense that it's just not the way that you originally intended. It didn't have to be used only in terms of moral categories and moral things. And so when King David was a young man and he was learning how to use the sling, you know, he had to learn how to make sure that the target would always be hit, how to aim straight, how to make sure that that rock that he was slinging would hit the target that he was intending. And if it didn't, that would be kata. It would miss the mark. It would fail to capture what was the desire of his heart. But there's another word that's also used. And this word kind of presumes that there is a relationship in place. So either there's a friendship, you're related to somebody, or next door neighbors, or two countries might have a treaty that they have established between themselves that have set certain rights and duties and obligations between them. And if one of those parties breaches that sense of what this is about, the word for that is pesha. There's a breach of trust where there's that sense of relationship. So if you go away on holidays, and someone you don't know comes and steals something from your house, then that's called robbery. But if it's a neighbor who comes and steals it from your house, that's called pesha, because you expected to be able to trust that person. You presumed that you could rely upon them. And that whenever there's a breach of trust, that is that experience of iniquity, that experience of breaching that whole call into that life. And the third experience is not so much about trust. It's just that sense that something isn't the way that it could have been. There's a lost potential, lost desire. So when I grew up in the country, you know, lots of the roads were still the old dirt tracks that had slowly just been kind of graded and slightly fixed over the time. But nothing much was really done to fix the topography. You know, if it went curving around and then down into the gullies and then back over the top of the hill, it wasn't straightened out, it hadn't been leveled. And so it was all crooked and weird. And in Hebrew, that's the word avar, and we get the sense of avon is when something is crooked, it's out of alignment, that whole experience that prevents us from experiencing what God, you know, really wanted for that place. And that is the experience of something that is a transgression from what was originally intended. And so all of those different things are at play within that relationship, within our sense of what we are to be. So if we're missing the mark, well, what is the mark that we originally were intended to have? And of course, we're told that we're to be in relationship to God, that we have this capacity to know and be known by God, a capacity to love. And so the ultimate failure in our lives is when we fail to love. And so during these days of Lent, particularly for these young people, these people who are preparing to be baptized and received into the church, there is that desire that you cast away all things of darkness, all things that aren't part of our lives and our experiences, that we're called to love and to surrender, called into that encounter with the God who's always wanting us to be free. And we see the journey of this man as he goes from that blindness, both physically but also spiritually, where he just doesn't know. He's trying to make sense of what was happening. He's trying to make sense of who it was that had done this amazing thing, as he's struggling in a pretty profound way with the Jewish authorities at the time, who are really questioning him and forcing him to make sense of all of these things. But rather than him rejecting Jesus, this questioning actually leads him into a deeper encounter and a deeper realization that no, nothing like this has ever been seen or heard before. That a man, not just who'd been blind by an accident or had a disease, but born blind, that to now be able to experience his sight, now to have that moment of transformation. I mean, how incredible and amazing that would have been for him, but for everyone in his circle around him. And he leads to this experience of recognizing that this must be a good man. This man Jesus must be good. This man Jesus must be anointed by the Lord. This man Jesus must be in a personal, a profound relationship with God to be able to do these things. And then ultimately, he's able to come to that place where he falls down in worship before him. We're invited to go on that same journey during these days of Lent, to cast away all of the things that prevent us from finding freedom, to find our life and our goodness in the Lord, and to respond to God calling us into that life and into that freedom. So let's continue along our journey, casting away the yoke of sin and allowing God to call us into the new sight of knowing Him, of loving Him, and of worshiping Him.